Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 17, The Descent of the River Ganges, Text 1. It's a very long Sanskrit prose text, so I'm not going to read that. I'm just going to read Srila Prabhupada's translation. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, Lord Vishnu, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, appeared as Vamandev in the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj. Then he extended his left foot to the end of the universe and pierced a hole in the covering with the nail of his big toe. Through this hole, the pure water of the causal ocean entered this universe as the Ganges River. Having washed the lotus feet of the Lord, which are covered with reddish powder, the water of the Ganges acquired a very beautiful pink color. Every living being can immediately purify his mind of material contamination by touching the transcendental water of the Ganges. Yet its waters remain ever pure. Because the Ganges directly touches the lotus feet of the Lord before descending within the universe, she is known as Vishnupadi. Later, she received other names like Janavi and Bhagirati. After 1,000 millenniums, the water of the Ganges descended on Dhruvaloka, the topmost planet in the universe. Therefore, all learned sages and scholars proclaim Dhruvaloka to be Vishnupada, situated on Lord Vishnu's lotus feet." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, Shukadeva Goswami describes the glories of the Ganges River. The water of the Ganges is called Patitapavana, the deliverer of all sinful living beings. It is a proven fact that a person who regularly bathes in the Ganges to purify both externally and internally. Externally, the body becomes immune to all kinds of disease, and internally, he gradually develops a devotional attitude toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Throughout India, many thousands of people live on the banks of the Ganges, and by regularly bathing in her waters, they are undoubtedly being purified both spiritually and materially. Many sages, including Shankaracharya, have composed prayers in praise of the Ganges, and the land of India itself has become glorious because such rivers as the Ganges, Yamuna, Godavari, Krishna, Kaveri, Krishna, and Narmada flow there. Anyone living on the land adjacent to these rivers is naturally advanced in spiritual consciousness. Srila Madhvacharya says, "Varaho vamapadam tu tadanyeshu tudakshinam padam kalpesha bhagavan adja Ahato Trivikramaha. Standing on his right foot and extending his left to the edge of the universe, Lord Vaman became known as Trivikram, the incarnation who performed three heroic deeds. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Vaitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasavi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So now we begin the detailed description of how, you know, the Ganges River descends from the upper part of the universe down to this planet. And as I mentioned in the last class, some of the things that we hear about in this description are visible to our ordinary material senses, and some things that are in these descriptions aren't visible to our material senses. And actually, one reason why we have the Srimad Bhagavatam is to tell us about things that we can't perceive with our ordinary material senses. So we know what the complete picture of reality is. So we can see some aspect of the Ganges River. You know, when we go to India, we can actually see that. You can actually trace the course of the river up into the Himalayan mountains, and at some point you find there's a glacier from which it's emerging. But beyond that, we can't see with our immaterial senses. You know, we can't see, you know, how it's the water, the causal ocean that's entering from the top of the material universe, how it's flowing down to Dhruvaloka. And we're going to be, you know, hearing how the water is carried from those upper planets down to the lower planets in millions of spaceships or airplanes. And, you know, that may seem a bit unusual, challenging to the material mind, but this is the reality. And part of being a devotee of Krishna means understanding our material minds and senses are limited. There are things that are beyond our ordinary conception, and we have to hear about these things through the parampara system. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadikshanti te jnanam jnani. So, we receive this knowledge from higher sources, ultimately from Krishna himself. He's the source of all real knowledge. And it comes down to us through the disciplic succession in the form of transcendental sound vibration. So, we become Shastra Chakshush. We see through the eyes of Shastra. In other words, we see by hearing from a proper source. Now, there is one interesting little fact I discovered in some of my scientific research, and that is that scientists have a hard time explaining why there's so much water on the earth. You know, of course they believe it comes about by chemical combination of you know, you combine hydrogen and oxygen somehow, but how, why there's so much of it on this planet, they found hard to explain just in terms of the chemistry and geology of the Earth. So I found some of them are proposing that they think the water on the Earth came from outer space by comets, you know, by millions of comets hitting the Earth. You know, they think that they think these comets are made of mostly of ice, which is water. So, and actually, they say that the Earth is being continually bombarded, you know, by little comets. You know, not the big, huge ones, but the pieces that break off from them, and they evaporate in the Earth's atmosphere, and that's why there's so much water on the Earth. So I just thought that was an interesting parallel that, I mean, it's just an interesting little fact that, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam is saying that water has come to the Earth being carried, you know, by millions of little spacecraft, you know, coming from the higher planets. And some scientists are saying that water on the Earth has come through millions of little comets coming from outer space. But anyways, what's really important is what's written in, you know, the Srimad, you know, Bhagavatam. So in the purport, you know, Srila Prabhupada mentions the sacred rivers of India, the Ganges, the Yamuna, the Godavari, the Kaveri, the Krishna, and the Narmada. There's one more. Does anybody remember what it is? Huh? Ganges is mentioned here. But anyways, there's one more. The Ganges, the Yamuna, the Godavari, the... Maybe that's it, the Sarasvati. Yeah. Yeah, the Sarasvati. So there's seven, you know, sacred rivers in India. And you find them, you know, they have personalities associated with them. You know, they're goddesses. And they each have their different carriers. I think the Ganges, you know, she rides on a crocodile. You know, you can see that, you know, sometimes on the banks of the Ganges, they have temples to Mother Ganga, and, you know, she's in her female form, riding on a crocodile. So, once I was in Bali, and, you know, the Hindu culture, you know, the Vedic culture, once extended way beyond the borders of India, you know, throughout Southeast Asia, across Indonesia. Now it's become an Islamic country, Indonesia, but there's this one island there, Bali, which has the original Hindu culture still there. And there are many ancient temples there. And I visited one of them, and they had this big bathing tank. And around the bathing tank, there were little statues of the goddesses of, you know, the seven sacred rivers, the Ganges, the Yamuna, Kaveri, Narmada, Godavari, so on. So, as mentioned here, they're very sacred. People who live on the banks of these rivers are very fortunate. In myself, I've been to the Ganges, the Yamuna, the Godavaris in South India. That's where Lord Chaitanya spoke to Ramananda Roy, kind of on the banks of the Godavari River. And then there's the Kaveri River. That's where Sri Rangam is. It's located on an island in the Kaveri River. You know, so I've been there. Then there's the Krishna River, which I've also seen. The Narmada I haven't really seen. And the Sarasvati, as we heard yesterday, at Allahabad, there's a place where the Ganges and the Yamuna come together. It's called the Sangam. It's also called Triveni. It means three rivers. You can only see two of them, but they say the Sarasvati is there invisibly, you know, maybe coming underground or something like that. So these sacred rivers are there, and you do get some effect from them. But in some places, Srila Prabhupada said you get the effect gradually over long periods of time, whereas bathing in the river or the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, of Krishna's pastimes, you get more immediate and direct, you know, benefit. So, you know, we want to, you know, bathe in the river of the Sankirtan movement, you know, bathe in the chanting of the Lord's glories, names, pastimes, teachings, etc. So, but still, it's beneficial, it's good if we have the opportunity to take bath in these sacred rivers. So how many have bathed in the Ganges? Good many of you. Yes, so it is, you know, very auspicious to do that. The first time I went to India and saw the Ganges was in 1979, and on Gaur Purnim, I remember, you know, bathing in the Ganges at dusk with a full moon rising. You know, there were many devotees, you know, taking bath at the Ganges at that time, and from the ISKCON temple and the other temples all around, there was, you know, the sound of chanting. It was very, you know, auspicious, you know, to do that, you know, to, you know, bathe in the Ganges River with the full moon rising on the appearance day of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that was very, very good. And earlier this year, you know, I went to India for a Bhaktivedanta Institute conference, and it took place at Allahabad at the confluence of the Ganges and the Yamuna. So as part of the after the conference, you know, we went on a visit to the Sangam, the place where the two rivers, actually three rivers, come together, and took bath there. So, you know, it's auspicious to do that, but it's not necessary. What's really necessary to do is to chant, you know, the Hare Krishna mantra, absorb the mind and the accounts of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Nectar Devotion, the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, of rivers, you know, I am, you know, the sacred Ganges, and of mountains, I am the Himalaya. So, and this is helpful. Everyone, you know, has some appreciation for the beauties of nature. People all over the world are attracted to the Himalayas. Everybody wants to go there, see them, climb them. Why is that? They're all attractive. They're all attractive. You know, the Himalayas are all attractive because they're a manifestation of a tiny little fragment of Krishna's opulence. And the same with the Ganges. It's very, you know, famous, very famous river. actually, you know, if you go up towards the hill, you know, where they have the Culver City Park, right before that there's this big flood channel. You know, it's got a bike path on it. But if you go down that bike path, you can see they've got a mural on the side of this flood channel, you know, showing, you know, the great rivers of the world. And one of them is the Ganges. So they've got a depiction of the Ganges River there. So people know about it. You know, they've heard about it. It's famous. It's attractive. And, you know, that's because it's an aspect of Krishna's glories. But after Krishna explains all these things to Arjuna, he says, that's just a fraction, you know, of my glories. No need to get all absorbed in it. Better to appreciate Krishna himself, you know, directly, his name, pastimes, teachings. You know, that's more important, but these other things are also there, and they're, you know, mentioned, you know, by Krishna himself. Yeah, so, you know, we see in, you know, material life, you know, people, they have some tendency to want to go somewhere and take bath. You know, they want to go to Bahamas. They want to go somewhere. They want to go somewhere and dip in the water. So that tendency to want to go somewhere and take a, you know, dip in the water, that can be transcendentalized, you know, by going to the actual sacred places. Of course, I think Srila Prabhupada once said, if you don't have an opportunity to take bath in the Ganges or one of the sacred rivers, you can take bath in the ocean. That's also good. Because actually those rivers flow into, you know, the ocean. So there are some little influence from them is there. So today is the disappearance day of Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur, and he's the author of the Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is one of the great biographies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's known as, I mean, Krishnadas Kaviraj, you know, author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, called him the Vyas of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Like there was Vyasadev who recorded Krishna's pastimes, and Vrindavan Das Thakur recorded, you know, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. But he focused mostly on the earlier pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So later, you know, the devotees in Vrindavan asked Krishnadas Kaviraj to write about Lord Chaitanya's later pastimes, and to also explicate his philosophy. So for that reason, because Krishnadas Kaviraj gave a lot of attention to Lord Chaitanya's teachings, to his philosophy, we study Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, Srila Prabhupada put emphasis, you know, on that book. But in this book, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the author, Krishnadas Kaviraj, pays his respects to Vrindavan Das Thakur as the original biographer of, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Yes.
According to scholars, and even if we look in different Vedic literature, we can find different descriptions. It seems there are maybe more than one Saraswati, or the Saraswati has flowed in a number of places, so it's a little bit hard to understand exactly where the Saraswati is.
Yes, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one description of the Saraswati flowing east, and then there's another description of the Saraswati flowing west through the desert regions and entering into, you know, the sea, you know, at places that we can, you know, recognize in northwestern India, you know, Gujarat, that area. So both are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in other Vedic literatures. So there may be, you know, the river Saraswati may have had more than one branch, and that's one way to look at it. It had one branch going to the west and another flowing to the east, and that's one way of looking at it. Or there may have been two rivers with the same name. Could be like that. But the western flowing Saraswati is definitely mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's also in the Mahabharata. And it's also apparently in the Rig Veda. So it's actually quite interesting because it helps date the Vedic literature, like the Rig Veda, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, because they talk about this big river, you know, flowing from the Himalayas down into the Western Ocean. And scientists have actually traced the course of a huge river that later dried up. And when it was flowing, was 5,000 years ago and more. So that would mean that it helps confirm the idea that the Vedic literature is 5,000 years old. If the authors of the Vedic literature knew about this flowing river, then that means they had to have known about it 5,000 years ago, and they had to have been there to see it, and it's in India. I mean, many of the secular scholars have the idea that the authors of the Vedic literature weren't originally in India. They were somewhere else in Asia, and they came only recently to India, you know, 3,500 years ago. So this evidence for this huge river, which is mentioned in the Vedic literature, is really kind of important. And actually, last time I was in India, earlier this year, I was doing some research, and I was actually tracing the course of this river through Rajasthan, mostly. And there are places there where you can see the banks of the river, huge banks. And then it kind of, you know, and in the middle now it's all agricultural fields, villages, but you can actually see there was a huge river that was once flowing in these areas. And some of it's visible also through satellite pictures and things like that. So anything else? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.